Welcome to The Thal Project. I'm your host, Saya the Jaffer. The Thal Project is a mini-series that explores Thal, also known as lentils or legumes, and the rich and diverse ways that people of the South Asian diaspora cook it. Today I welcome Rina Kukreja, an activist scholar filmmaker who studies migration. She teaches me Giawali Chana Dal, a Punjabi recipe, alongside sharing her reflections about filmmaking, Dal, and memory.
My name is Rina Kukreja, and I am a South Asian immigrant to Canada, settler, of course. And I'm going to make Giawali Chana Dal, which is actually a Punjabi recipe eaten during the summer months in Punjab.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Delhi, but my family traveled around different parts of India. My mother came from Lahore. She always saw herself as a Lahoria. And my father was from Patiala in Punjab. So both of them were Punjabis, but from different sides of the border. And their cooking styles also varied. So it was interesting. We're going to begin by pre-soaking the chana dal, which, remember, when you're going and buying chana dal, don't end up buying split peas, but buy the regular labeled chana dal because it makes a big difference. And ideally, you pre-soak the chana dal overnight. If you are stretched for time, just heat up water in a kettle and then let it soak for a couple of hours. And if that's also not possible, we just increase the cooking time.
So I see that you have already soaked the chana dal, which is great.
Mm-hmm. So I soaked up 1.5 cups of chana dal yesterday night. So it's had a good soak of 10 hours. And I'm just going to rinse it out again with fresh water. At this moment, I've also put it in a pressure cooker because today I'm going to use pressure cooker. That's what I grew up with in India, and all families, including mine, used to use pressure cooker.
My mom still uses one.
I love it. We're just going to give a rinse to the pre-soaked chana dal to make sure it's all cleared out. There you go. As you can see, the color of the water slightly changed with the pre-soak. And I'm going to do one more swirl. Just because it's very satisfying to do that. I do it with hand. I washed my hands before, so I'm a very hands-on person. There you are. And I'm just gonna add water, which will be then used for final cooking.
How much water are we adding?
For 1.5 cups, I would add 1 liter of water. You can always reduce the water by putting it on heat once it's boiling. But if you don't put enough water, the chana dal will burn. For today, I went and bought 2 small bottle gold squash. When you're buying this, you'll see it in what is labeled as an ethnic produce section. God, I really hate that labeling. These are long squash that are green, light green in color. When you're buying them, buy the tender ones that are small. And when you press them in the middle, they should be firm. You will find a difference in buying the small tender ones that are firm, unlike the bigger ones, because when you cut them, the flesh inside is a bit drier. And let me just cut one here. You can see the juice coming out almost immediately.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? And that means it's fairly fresh, so it'll have lesser cooking time. And I will begin by peeling this. I grew up peeling it with a grater or a knife. This recipe, chana dal with the ghee, is a very popular one in Punjab, and it's eaten by almost every family. I've worked in Punjab, so I've worked with Dalit families, I've worked with poor farming families, and I've also gone to homes of people who were upper class. And this dal actually cuts across all class and caste barriers. It's very simple. It's made with very humble ingredients. Chana dal is not expensive, and bottle gourd is also very inexpensive. And it is something that people make for hot summer afternoons to be eaten just simply. So I've just peeled off the bottle gourd and I've cut it into a half, longitudinally and then made long strips, maybe 1 centimeter each, because this bottle gourd allowed me to make 3 long strips. And then I make small pieces, roughly around maybe 1 centimeter each. You can see how thin they are.
Yeah, they're quite small pieces.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's the blending of the tastes of the dal with the gourd and the ghee and the jeera tempering is what brings the whole dish together. So I'm not too fussy about whether you've cut it in the right size or the shape. It's how long a cooking time you're gonna give it. Another thing what I would do while I'm cutting this, just before cutting this, I would actually start up the pressure cooker, warming up the chana dal, because normally I would like the chana dal to come to a boil before I add the bottle gourd. And normally I do it for 3-4 minutes so that the chana dal has time to cook a bit on its own. Chana dal is a bit tricky, right? Because when we buy it from the supermarket, we are never sure how old it is. And the staleness of it matters in terms of how quickly it cooks. The older it is, the longer it takes to cook. It's something that is extremely popular, as I said, amongst the Punjabis. If you go on the net, you'll find lots of variations. I am making a very simple and standard variation with no extensive tadka or tempering of tomatoes or onions, because it is meant for summers, and in summer, when the temperature is reaching 42 or 44, you don't want your stomach to be held back by a heavy, spicy meal. The dal in itself is quite sweet when it comes together. It's not spicy, we just use turmeric and salt. And if you want, a couple of chili peppers that can be added towards the end, and maybe a couple of cloves if you want to add. And that's about it. Again, it's cooked by almost everyone, and it's served simply with rice or with roti, thick rotis. If you go to a dhaba or an eatery, then obviously they'll try to elevate it. It's a dish that you would not normally find in restaurants because it is not considered hot cuisine.
So you mentioned that you spent time in Punjab with farmers and other communities. What were you doing there? Like, when I first met you, I knew you as a documentary filmmaker, and now I also know you as an associate professor at Queen's in Global Development Studies. But I wonder if you want to talk a bit about that trajectory and some of the work you've done historically.
I mean, my early career was as a filmmaker, as a documentary filmmaker, and I worked primarily with rural communities. I began by working on gender issues, understanding the intersection of caste with patriarchy and how that oppressed and exploited lower caste women. And that obviously took me to some parts of India more than others, just because of my language familiarity and the kind of work I was doing with the UN at that time. Because I was working with Dalit or low caste families, I would stay with them and be invited to meals, and that's got me introduced to different ways of cooking, different foods, which obviously haven't been recorded because most of the food recipes are done by upper caste, upper class folks, except just in the recent years, there's a changing trend. That's what took me around. It also introduced me to differences in cooking, which was lovely. And I was very appreciative of how people would open their homes and their heart and share food with me and cook sometimes with me. So in my work as an academic, but also continuing my whole interest as a filmmaker, past few years I've been working with migrant men, particularly South Asian migrant men. And it's taken me across to Greece, to Portugal, and to Italy. And because I'm middle-aged with white hair and lots of wrinkles, the men who are younger see me as a maternal figure, an absent mother figure. And we've had these amazing cooking sessions with them because, again, these are encounters that are long duration. I don't stay with them, but I live close to them, and we cook and have meals together. So we've actually made this dal, the ghia chana dal, once, and it was with a group of Pakistani young men. And it was interesting, they were telling me the variation that they added garlic. And I was arguing, no garlic, my mom's from Lahore, she would never do that. Well, you know, one of the young guys said, well, times have changed, garlic would be interesting. And I laughed and I said, yes, you know, that's how recipes evolve. And it would be lovely to bond over recipes, to have them reminiscence about how they were missing their mom's food. And actually, one of the photo voice that I ended up doing with South Asian migrant men in Greece actually started with one of the young men sending me a message with a photograph on WhatsApp and saying, I made this biryani. And, you know, he sent me a picture first and I wrote back saying, ye kya, what is it? And he said, it's my mom's biryani, I recreated it. And I called him up immediately. He was so proud of it. And he said, when I get married, I'm going to cook this meal, it's really perfect. And when you come back to Athens, I'm going to make it for you. And that started me to do this exhibition to break down the stereotypes we have, the Islamophobic stereotypes we have of the demonic male other. But here I was seeing another dimension of the men who were really lonely, who were craving food. Food is understood, especially by migration scholars, as a sensory nostalgic trigger. Cooking brings you closer to your home that you're missing. The smells, the cutting, all of those are evocative of home and they create bonding. And that was really lovely. And over a period of time, many of the men shared recipes and desires of what they would cook for their future brides. And that was really touching. And also, I think a couple of them got residency and they went back and I asked them, what did you cook? They said, we cooked our mom's chicken curry or paratha. And they were shocked because growing up in rural homes, men often would not cook because the hearth is seen as a female preserve. But here were these men who had become very fluent in cooking because of the very fact of their migrating alone as single men and not having family reunification. Yeah. So there were these kind of, what I would say, very neat subversions happening.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's so beautiful. And when my dad migrated to Canada in the 70s, he did at that time migrate alone. He actually taught my mom how to cook.
Really?
He was cooking for himself and then he taught her to cook the way he wanted to eat.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then, and, you know, he still does cook a little bit, but mostly my mom for my whole life. She was the one who did most of the cooking for sure.
Well, that's cool. My mom and dad loved food and they both loved cooking. And when I was growing up, they would say, Rina, fall in love with a guy who has the same kind of love for food, because if you find a partner who doesn't have a passion for food, you're sunk. The marriage will be on a shaky ground.
What good advice.
Yeah, it is. I like it. And I've got a foodie as my partner. So as you can see, we've just come over to the pressure cooker and you can see the white foam is gathering on the top and we are going to be skimming the white foam till the water boils a bit clearer. And it's only when it becomes a bit clearer that I'm going to add turmeric and cloves and salt. We'll just give it another couple of minutes. And in the meantime, normally, if I'm doing this kind of cooking, I make the zeera pulao or cumin seed pulao that accompanies this dish traditionally. So now you can see the water is boiling in the chana dal. And this is where I'm going to be skimming it off. And as you can see, Saida, the water is beginning to run clear.
Yeah. What drew you to documentary filmmaking?
Right.
And to the topics that you've been working with?
Okay, that's an interesting trajectory. So in my undergrad years, I used to go hiking. I joined a hiking club and we would go around to villages. But also remember, I come from, my father's side is a farming family. So they have roots in rural Punjab. And my mother is a displaced migrant, a refugee from the partition. So I was curious about the kind of voices that I was hearing and not seeing them reflected in the mainstream news. I've changed a lot. So at that time, I had this whole savior narrative that I'm going to train myself as a filmmaker and help people whose voices are unheard to be shared across. And that's what I started with. And I did my MFA in filmmaking and documentary filmmaking in India. And I started working on documentaries, primarily working with rural lower caste, lower class women who were struggling to find their ways, dealing with caste oppression. And then as time went on, the kind of dispossessions that they were suffering under neoliberalism. Somewhere very close to the start of my trajectory as a filmmaker came along Chandra Mohanty's, the seminal article that she published in 88, Under Western Eyes.
Under right? Western Eyes.
It just blew me away. I read that article and I said, damn, what am I going to do? The whole premise of my filmmaking was built on a very problematic construct. And it led me to reflect and then build in collaborations with the women. I've just put in 1 teaspoon of turmeric once the water has run clear. And now I'm adding a little less than a teaspoon of salt. I let it boil for 2 or 3 minutes more just to get the chana dal a bit softened. As you can see, the bottle gourd is fairly tender. And if I let it cook as it should with the chana dal for 10 minutes, once the pressure is reached, they'll become mush. So you do want to see some slight pieces that are kind of whole. Yeah, let it boil. And so I was saying, normally when I'm cooking this, I put the jeera rice to cook at the same time. You heat up a pan with ghee, add the jeera or the cumin seed, the cloves, optional, tejpatta or bay leaf, the Indian bay leaf. Let them change color, then add the rice, the pre-washed rice, 1 cup. Swirl it around in the ghee till the ghee is coated and then add water. So 1:2 proportion is what I use. Cover it. Before covering it, I add salt. Then you have 2 dishes, the main and the carb, cooking away. And you can supplement it with a raita or a yogurt dish. It can be a very simple raita with dry roasted cumin seeds ground up and added to the yogurt, which is thin, with adding a bit of water and salt and black pepper. Again, the focus is on using minimal spices that will help move your sluggish digestion process, because the heat can really make you not want to eat spicy fried food. This is like a calming thing that you come to. And I have beautiful memories of coming back from school absolutely exhausted at 2 p.m. and asking mom, kya bana hai? And she would say, pulao aur ghiya wali dal. And I would just sigh in happiness because I knew the taste that was coming out. And so when Paritosh, my partner, started dating me, he also started coming to my house. He came first to my house for my mom's food, and then we fell in love. We would hear his mobike coming roughly around 2 p.m., just the time for lunch, and he had that same reaction of, chana dal, because it's simple but hits all the sweet spots. Let's go back and add the bottle gourd that has been cut to the dal. And as you can see, now the quantities of the water seems a bit less. I would add a tiny bit more water just to be cautious, 1/2 cup, and then I cover it with the pressure cooker. If you're using a regular pot on the stovetop, I would say once it comes to a boil, put a timer on for 20 minutes and then come and keep stirring it once in a while. It's building the pressure. Once the pressure comes on, you'll hear a sound, and that's when then I put the timer on. We've done 10 minutes. As you can see, it's whistling away. If you're using an Indian style pressure cooker, this is a Lagostina. It gives a long, low kind of whistle. The Indian one that I have at home gives these sharp bursts. I think one of the biggest joys of cooking food is sharing, and that's what I love. It's cooked for a bit, 10 minutes. I would switch off the heat off and let this come to a rest. After a minute of the heat being switched off, you'll hear the whistling sound abate, and that's when then I'll do a quick check.
It'll stop. A lot of dals are simple, mm-hmm. and some of them are more complicated. Where do you stand? Are there more complicated dals that you really love? To you, should dal be complicated?
I see dal as a very uncomplicated, simple dish that brings out and enhances the flavor of the lentil itself. Sometimes I like dals that have some vegetable built in, like there's a dal that we use in Punjab again, which is green moong dal with palak or spinach, which again is a fantastic combination. And if you look at it, when you add lemon juice, it helps the absorption of the iron from the spinach. Again, those are simple one meal dishes, but extremely elegant in the nuanced taste they bring. Sometimes a dish like dal makhani, that is extremely popular in restaurants, we don't make often in our homes. It's used for festive occasions, and those are richer dishes. They are like a dish. It's not an everyday dal. And if you were to ask me the range of dals I would cook as every day, I think around 40 days would go by before I would repeat any of the dal recipe. There are various combinations I use. There's another cookbook that I've really loved. It's called 1000 Recipes. It's written by an Indian origin woman who is an immigrant to North America. She has recreated some very non-mainstream dishes, dishes that I'm familiar with, like turnip and carrots cooked at home as a meal, dishes that you normally would not find in these fashionable cookbooks. It's one of my other go-to books, and it is one book that I'm going to be gifting to my daughter as she enters university.
That's so wonderful. What a lovely gift.
You can hear that the whistle's reduced.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bring the pressure cooker. I'm going to bring it straight to the sink and tilt it to the side, not on the top. And then I let cold water run on the side just to release the pressure. Now you can see the pressure's eased off. There's no more whistling. And you heard that click.
Yeah.
That means that now it's safe for me to open the pressure cooker. You can also release the pressure by using the valve here.
Yeah, you can see how soft the dal is.
Yeah, right? So it's become soft. You can see adding a bit of water was fantastic. It's not soupy, it's stewy. If you want it slightly thick, I would put the heat on and reduce it. But I think this is perfect for the moment. All I'm going to do is now give it the tempering of ghee with jeera. And then add a bit of lemon juice as an optional thing later on. And let's heat our pan. I'm heating up 2 tablespoons, I think.
You said 2 tablespoons.
So I make the ghee myself at home,
so
you know. Yeah.
How special.
So I have put 2 tablespoons of ghee in a pan and let it heat up. And meanwhile, I take the cumin seeds, and today I'm using a small additional tempering of red dried chili peppers, primarily because I didn't add any chili powder or chili flakes in the dal. I'm taking 2 whole chilies that are long. They are again bought from an Indian store. They are Indian chilies. One time I used Calabrian chilies that are killer hot. I nearly died. So Indian chilies sometimes are sweeter than the Calabrian ones. They're smaller, but do they carry a punch?
Looks like about a teaspoon and a half.
Yeah.
Cumin?
I break them in half just because it's easier. It all depends on what my mind and hand wants to do at that exact moment when I have the chilies in my hand. I mean, it's such a sensorial thing holding the dried chilies. It brings back memories of learning to do this growing up. And sometimes you do it without thinking, but it all comes together. The ghee has started warming up. You can see small bubbles coming at the bottom, so you know the ghee is ready. Swirling the jeera, and then I add, I've cut them in 3, that's what my hand and my mind decided to do. And I've just raised the pan up from the fire because again it's an electric heat, it's a bit difficult to manage, and I will bring it straight to the and then you add a bit of the dal to the pan to make sure you get all of the tempering out.
Perfect. You got it. Well, it smells amazing.
And then we do the taste test.
And then adding a bit of the lemon juice. I think we are done.
And you don't want to add too much of the juice because you want the sweetness of the ghee and the dal. The chana dal, when it's cooked, is usually quite sweet. Say that you should really taste the dal and see.
So refreshing and simple. Mm-hmm. But there is still some undertone of heat.
Slight. And the chili would be less. I mean, if you don't want the chili heat, you can always not put it.
Right.
It's totally optional.
It is very mild.
Dish. So the combination works really well with the rice, the jeera pulao, and the raita, and the other side dish that I made on the side, which I learned in my 30s from my colleague's mom, and which I have grown to use and carried over in my migratory journey.
How beautiful.
Thank you
so much, Reenak. I want us to come back to the documentary piece.
Yeah, Chandra Mohanty's article caused an earthquake in my head just as I was embarking on my filmmaking career, because I was questioning where would my voice stand and would I be appropriating people's voices and creating for the visual mediatized exploitation of women from the global south. Eventually, I started involving them in decision making, right from holding gatherings, actually having them decide what was going to be the focus of each of the documentaries. Sometimes it didn't go well with the funders because I was working for UN organizations, but other times it needed some persuasion. And then having the women sit with me as we storyboarded the documentary, and sometimes they also worked with me in the field as associate camera person, audio recorder. In one of the documentaries that I ended up doing, they also worked with me as we edited the film. And sometimes they decided to not include certain stories just because they felt it would be to the detriment of their community or it did not serve the larger purpose. Very interesting and conscious decisions taken by the women, which I learned to respect. If I was not reflective, I might not have done that because I was pulled up by such silences and omissions. Learning to listen to the women, working with them, and understanding that their larger goal was very different was really important for me, especially if I wanted to work alongside and not impose my voice. That's continued even with the men. The guys decided for the photo voice, the exhibition that I did with the South Asian migrant men in Greece. And this year, I've just come back from another photo voice that I've done with Italo-Bangladeshis. These are Bangladeshi origin folks who have moved to Italy. And I worked with a group of them in the larger Veneto or the Venice area. And the same. So they chose the focus, they chose the layout and how it should flow. Whenever I'm cooking any of the dals that I grew up with, because I have moved away from my home, I moved away from my family. When I cook here in Kingston, I sometimes am transported back to memories of cooking with my family, learning to cook with my mom and her sisters, or the cooking that was done, say, in a pind or a village in Punjab, where some of the things would happen. And so again, food evokes nostalgia in different ways. It's very sensorial. The smell transports me back. Sometimes just seeing the clouds in the sky want me to make a dal, a particular dal that we would cook during a rainy season. And dals are a dense expression of how simple things can get transposed to a very elevated level of satisfaction that's very hard to sometimes tell people who think dal makhni is the only dal for India. That's about it, I'd say.
Thank you, Reena.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dal Project. Follow me on Instagram at Dal Project. Dal is spelt D-A-A-L. Intro and exit music are excerpts from the song Creep by Lal. Thanks for tuning in.